in the backwoods of America, we have climbed the highest mountains, searched the densest forest, dragged the swamps, and scoured the prairies to find our leader, retired U.S. Marine gunny, Bud Cornwell.
Welcome back, great patriots of America. This is the Gunny, and I apologize deeply for not doing many podcasts over the last months. I'm recovering from a concussion. Yes, I fell in my shop on a concrete floor. Can you imagine? Yeah, that's what happened. And now I think maybe I can put two sentences together. I'm going to try this tonight to do what I can to give you the truth of what's going on. Proper education is necessary for a free society. What is proper education? We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about the federal role in the education. How many teachers are in America? Which states have the highest union membership, which is important as associated with teachers? And then we have states that have what is called the right to work law. And communism, global communism, and this labor movement, and why it has a major impact in our country today. Last but not least, we're going to talk about the number of union members in the United States from 2000-2003. That's good news. It's not bad news. It's good news. So stay with me. Do not go away. You do not want to miss this podcast.
As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever.
I'm going to do a lot of reading because, you know, recovering from a concussion is very tremendous. And it's hard for me to remember or do the normal things that we need to do. So let's start with the federal role in education. Yeah, you know, the federal government, those guys that take your taxes, this is their role. This is from a government website on how the education system, as they call it, is divided between the states and the federal government. The education is primarily a state or local responsibility in the U.S. It is the states and the communities, as well as public and private organizations of all kinds, that establishes the schools and colleges, develop curriculum, and determine requirements for graduation. Listen to this. This is from the federal government ed.gov website. The structure of education finance in America reflects the prominent state and local role. Of the $1.15 trillion spent nationwide on education at all levels for schools between 2012 and 2013, a substantial majority will come from the states, local, and private sources. This is especially true at the elementary and secondary level, where about 92% of the funds come from non-federal sources. Listen to what I'm telling you, non-federal sources. That means that the federal contributed to the elementary and secondary education is about 8%, which includes funds not only from the Department of Education, but also from other federal agencies, such as the Department of Health and Human Services, Head Start Program, and Department of Agriculture, school lunch programs. Again, federal programs. So, what are we dealing with? Let me tell you what the government says we're dealing with, and then I'll tell you the rest of the story. Although the Education Department of the government share a total education funding in the U.S. is relatively small, the government, federal government education system, works hard to get a big bang for its taxpayer-provided bucks for targeting its funds where they can do the most good. Did you hear what I just said? The most good. This targeting reflects the historical development of the federal role in education as a kind of emergency response system, a means of filling the gaps in the states and local support for education when the critical national needs arise. It's very important that you understand what I just said. For the education, when the critical need of the nation arises. In 2023, to give you an example, 7 million employees in the public sector belongs to unions. Think about what I'm telling you. Compared to 7.4 million workers in the private sector. So the bottom line is the federal government, the state governments, the local governments are now being controlled by the unions. It's very important to understand that. What does it mean to be part of a union? Going to explain that to you on this podcast. So let's do this. Let's talk about the teachers in America, right? You know, those people, when you send your kids to get educated, it's called a teacher, right? How many teachers are there in the United States? WeAreTeachers.com. That's the website, WeAreTeachers.com. And how many teachers are there? altogether, there are 4 million, just above 4 million teachers in the United States. It goes all the way through the education system, all the way up to K-12, the public and private schools, plus adult education and teachers of technical schools. This doesn't include colleges. So teachers account for 2.5% of the work population. Okay, I get it. 2.5%, a lot of teachers understand that. Let's talk about the number of teachers that are part of a union. The National Center for Education Statistics, nces.ed.gov, there are 3,608,600 teachers in the traditional public schools that are part of a union. There are 218,000 charter school teachers. So the total teachers in a union in America is over or almost 4 million teachers, where there is only 108,000 teachers that are not part of a union. We must understand this. This is not something that we need to put on the back burner. I've said it over and over again. The education system in America is being controlled by the federal government. Well, wait a minute. They only have 8% of the funding, but they have 100% of the curriculum that's being injected in our education system because of the massive amounts of teachers in a union. See, the union is the one that determines what our teachers teach, not the state, not the local, not the community. You're getting the point here, right? So how do we correct this? How do we change our country back into educating our citizens in a free society?
The federal government is massive, wasteful, and growing larger every year. It's time to downsize the federal government. The Department of Education was created in 1979 to provide subsidies for K-12 education and higher education. Today, the department routinely consumes about $50 billion a year in taxpayer dollars, about $400 for every American family. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent by the department, yet all it has to show for it are stagnant test scores, huge bureaucracies, and massive increases in the cost of education. While federal involvement in education has dramatically increased and funding per pupil has more than tripled since the 1970s, performance on standardized tests has remained decidedly flat. The U.S. also routinely performs poorly on international comparisons, while Canada, which has no federal education department, consistently does well in international rankings. The regulations and mandates that go with education funding are also expensive. In 2008, the Department of Education estimated that 7.8 million hours of work would be needed for state and local education agencies to comply with just those regulations governing Title I grants. In many states, a majority of state-level education department workers are those administering federally funded programs. Aid to college students has also increased dramatically, driving tuition higher and leaving college no more affordable than before, at a cost of about $40 billion a year. Total student debt now tops $1 trillion. That's more than either outstanding U.S. auto loan debt or credit card debt. Channeling taxpayer dollars through Washington and then back to the states is an inefficient way to fund local activities like education. It would be better if states funded their own education programs, free from all the paperwork that comes with federal aid. The Department of Education and the entirety of its programs can simply be shut down at a savings of at least $50 billion a year. For details on cutting the Department of Education and other government programs, visit downsizinggovernment.org, a project of the Cato Institute.
The Cato Institute is one of many organizations in America that is trying to save the Republic, to save America against the globalist infiltration of communism. It's that simple. So let's talk about unions. You know, I mentioned the number of teachers in a union. So let's talk about the states. Which states have the highest union membership? Hawaii, 23.7% of the population in Hawaii are part of a union. New York, 22%. Rhode Island, 17.8%. And the thing about it is these states have no right to work laws, which I'm going to discuss shortly. States with the lowest union memberships are South Carolina, 2.9, North Carolina, 3.1, and Utah at 3.7%. So what does right to work laws mean? If you look at the states in general, there are 27 states in America that have right to work laws. And then you have 23% of the states that do not have that right to work law. I'm going to explain it to you. The main difference is this right to work law is different than having a union, because these states that have the right to work law protects you and you don't have to be part of a union, which is awesome. From the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations, AFL-CIO, the right to work is the name for a policy designed to take away the rights from working people. Again, a union organization saying this. Backers of right-to-work laws claim that these laws protect workers against being forced to join a union. No, it doesn't. The reality is that the federal law already makes it illegal to force someone to join a union. This is, you know, union people talking about it. No, there's no federal law that tells people that they have to join a union. The real purpose of the right to work law is to tilt the balance towards big corporations and further rig the system at the expense of workers' families. These laws make it harder for a working person to form unions and collectively bargain for better wages and conditions. These people are sick. They're absolutely sick. In a capitalist society, you work, you do good, you move up. You get a better pay. This is how it works. But that's not what the unions believe in. They believe that all of these people need to get more pay for one reason, so that the union leaders can become millionaires. That's the difference. In a society based upon your efforts to work instead of the government, local, state, and federal, allowing you to get a specific wage based upon you being part of a union. Work hard, earn money. So last but not least, we're going to talk about the communism and labor movement and how that has influenced our country pretty much over the last 100 years. Communism and the labor movement. Communist activists took a strong interest in America and the trade unions from 1920s through the 1950s and played an important role in shaping the nature of the American union movement. Initially, communist trade unions activism drew upon the radical labor transitions that preceded the formation of the American Communist Party, which we're still dealing with today. Communist trade unions were most effective than the Great Depression and World War II. In those years, communist activists held, better known as the Congress of Industrial Organizations, and bringing industrial unionization to previous unorganized workers. And this was, again, in the early years of the 19th century. So if you go to the AFL-CIO.org, you can see the statistics. They're not ashamed of sharing it. Therefore, I'm going to tell you about it. They say we are the Democratic Voluntary Federal or Federation of 60 nations and international labor unions that represent 12.5 million working people. It's kind of interesting. 12.5 million, 60 nations. But yet we have 7 million in America that's part of a union. Think about that one. So the number of union members in America between 2000 and 2023. Here is the results. In 2000, we had 16.3 million people in a union, and it started to decrease. In 2008, Obama elected president. And it went back up to 16 million from 15 million. Then it dropped in his first 4 years of the term. And then he finally realized he was not paying attention to the unions. So in 2012, it started increasing. Back up to 14 million. And then President Trump was elected, and it's starting to drop, which it should, because he had an economy, had people working, don't need unions, go out there, earn a dollar, and be part of the capitalism of this country. And then in 2021, should I say who became president? Nope, not going to say it. But between 2021, it rose from 14 million to 14.5 million. So in other words, the unions are re-energizing, getting more members in this country. Sad, but true. But you have to understand, in the 40s, during World War II, the federal government hired a lot of people to support the war, and I get that. And 1944, there were a lot of unionized workers in America. But it dropped drastically. By 1950, it became half of that. And then from 1950, it started to climb up and up and up again. And now we're back at 14 million union members. However, let's go back to the teachers. And this is what I'm talking about. Is the majority, the vast majority of these teachers are unionized individuals in the education system, which means the federal government, even though they only have 8% of the budget of the education system. They control it. This is why the Department of Education in America, as it's called, needs to be eliminated and allow the states to control and or present to our students education based upon the history, the sociology of America. This is why our students are not being taught what is necessary for a free society outside of the globalists of this world. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. This is The Gunny, and hopefully I can continue to come back and give you more information because I do the research. Therefore, you do not have to. This is The Gunny. Out.
Make a Ford and a Chevy that'll still last 10 years like they should. 'Cause the best of the free life is still yet to come.